And Kathy Dawes now, along with former Governor John Carlin. Always look forward to chatting with him and getting some perspective on some of the state politics, things that are going on. Before we get into that, though, and you mentioned something that I've been hearing from a couple of folks in the community, and wanted to do a shout-out to Steve Logback's family. I guess he passed very unexpectedly, and I think you said your wife had a lot of dealings with him, and Vice President, Associate Vice President, Assistant Vice President for Communications at Kansas State University. So very sad.
Very sad and a huge loss for K-State. He was an incredible individual. He had the whole package put together, incredibly talented, had a passion for what he was doing, worked, knew how to collaborate and work with other people, and he was an incredible person, period.
And I worked with him a lot, too. He several times, and again, Associate Vice President for Communications and Marketing. I had a lot of dealings with Steve. I was extremely shocked when I heard this morning. So.
Yes, really sad. Certainly our thoughts go out to the family, and the university is really going to miss him. It's going to be a very hard position to feel because he had so much talent, and communications are so important. Anybody and anything that's of any size or complexity knows how important communications are, and he was a gem. He had the whole package.
Yes, and I can't tell you the number of times we worked with each other. And I know, of course, I should mention, too, that you also work at Kansas State University. That's another part of your title that we probably need to share with people.
Well, I do some teaching, but I certainly am not in the category of making a huge difference by any means.
I had an opportunity to visit campus just yesterday. I was up at KSDB, and I was actually on the other side of the microphone. It was kind of weird to be interviewed for a change, and visited one of their classes and doing a little promoting of Manhattan Broadcasting. So good to see the young faces and the students there and learning how to do the trade, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I love working with these talented students that come along.
Well, moving along,
yes.
Of course, we're hearing that Governor Brownback is leaving, and no real shock there, but just some of your thoughts, and we've made this kind of transition before to the lieutenant governor and kind of how
true.
That all works.
That's true. Governor Sebelius left to join the Obama administration, and Governor Parkinson, or Lieutenant Governor Parkinson, became governor. It's when it's official. I mean, for Governor Brownback, it won't be until he's confirmed. Soon as he's confirmed, I actually don't know the paperwork, whether he resigns or he's no longer there, he's got another job or whatever, but there'll be an immediate transfer. And the lieutenant governor has been working now for weeks, maybe a few months, actually, preparing. I know he's added staff and he'll be ready to take over day one.
And he's been in a lot of the functions, I've noticed, too. So it makes sense.
Yes. Very much more visible. Obviously running for, in this case, for him, re-election in 2018.
I had an opportunity to interview the lieutenant governor, Jeff Collier, actually there at the State House when we were doing our series on mental health, and had a good visit with him there in their chambers, and it was interesting to hear some of the things he had to say at that time. And, of course, he is a physician.
That's correct.
So, you know, he kind of had his own angle on the way things work that way. But it'll be interesting to see. Now, generally, when you have a transition like this, there isn't that much of a shift, really, is there? I mean, obviously.
Well, the assumption is there will not be any, because Governor Brownback picked him. And he's been a part of the team for 6.5+ years. So, to expect or speculate on a dramatic change, it's not going to happen.
It is interesting, though, delving a little bit more into it, I think it would be fair to say that Governor Brownback hasn't been as popular in recent years among some of the population anyway. Do you think that Lieutenant Governor Collier will continue to, you think he'll kind of go his own way maybe a little bit?
Well, I think very likely from a communications personality point of view, he's obviously aware that Governor Brownback, his approval ratings at one time was the lowest of any governor in the country. He's going to want to separate himself, at least in terms of appearance. Now, I don't think the policies will change. I think his philosophy is not that far from what Governor Brownback has presented for the last 6.5 years. But there will be a different tone, different message. He'll have different staff. They'll be communicating differently. that we can count on.
And let's face it, and I'm sure you always felt a little bit under scrutiny as governor. People are
You always are.
You have to have pretty thick skin, I would guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, you're monitored all the time, and it's even changed, but it's changed dramatically from the time I was governor. I mean, technology, I mean, the internet, Twitter, all these ways to communicate, news around the clock. It was a different world back in the 80s. I feel like there were good times. I feel like I got a lot done. I worked well with a Republican legislature. Very proud of what we've done together. No governor just does things. There are rare exceptions, decisions. But most of the real work has to be done with the capacity to cooperate and work with the legislative body. And that's probably the most significant thing in regard to the last few months, last year of Governor Brownback's term, is that after the 26th election, there was a coalition, particularly in the House, but quite a bit in the Senate as well, that put together a different agenda than what he had proposed and got through the legislature prior to 2016.
Now, I'm remembering, and I'm looking back, of course, at the years that you were governor, and you were there a long time. I would say you were probably a pretty popular governor. Would that be fair to say?
Well, that's not for me to comment on. I've always joked, you know, when a lot of people would come up and be very positive, and I said, you know, I wish I knew how you really voted. You're just being kind. But we did get a lot done. I mean, I went out to, you know, we passed 6 constitutional amendments my last election that I worked. And I worked very hard to pass those. And for better or worse, they've had a huge impact on the state.
You were there 8 years.
I was there. I was the first. I had the first opportunity. Well, I shouldn't say the first opportunity because I defeated an incumbent that had served a 4-year term. But I was the first to serve 2 4-year terms.
Of course, I guess in all fairness, Governor Brownback has too. So it's interesting
to
look
yes,
at that.
Well, yes, but the record will show 6.5. Oh, he was elected twice.
True. Quite true.
Similar to Governor Sebelius.
Now, did they have different ways of measuring your effectiveness? I know, as you said, I know the recent polls haven't shown Governor Brownback in a very nice light, but did they have that when you were governor?
I don't think so. I have no memory of a poll that said I was liked or disliked or whatever. I feel comfortable that it was relatively positive because the Republicans were willing to work with me. And if I'd been unpopular, they would have abandoned me very quickly.
Right. And you don't see as much of that across the aisle. And I don't mean just at the Kansas governor position, but even when we get to the U.S. Senate and House, you don't see as much of that.
And consequently, we're not getting from government what we need. We have got to find a way to communicate with each other, work with each other, work through our differences, being willing to listen to somebody you disagree with and look for common ground. It was a whole different environment. It was positive and constructive when I was there. It was competitive. The Republican leadership disagreed with me some, but in the end, we wanted to do what was best for Kansas, and we knew our differences had to be worked out. Doing nothing was not, in many areas, an acceptable direction.
And speaking of the other side of the aisle, of course, Bob Dole has always been credited with reaching across that aisle, too, as a very prominent Republican.
Yeah, and people need to know and understand that. He was as partisan and tough from a political campaigning point of view. But as a legislator and as a senator in particular, was very good at working across the aisle. Unbelievably so. There's some great laws that were there because he was willing to work with, in some cases, a very liberal Democratic senator.
Well, really, in more recent times, you kind of banded together with some other former governors when it came to the judge election and some of those issues, I think, too.
Yes. Governors Hayden and Graves and Sebelius and myself organized an effort in 2016, and it was driven a lot by the concern about the judges and the devastating impact that would have had on the state if we just started casually throwing judges out because there was a campaign and somebody was upset and generated the activity. It would have been very, very harmful to our system. But we also got involved in races. I mean, we were involved in legislative races because part of the reason that we were in trouble with the judges is that we had a legislature that went along with the governor's philosophy on making appointments more political. We all served under a time where it wasn't political, and we liked that, and we felt like we had done a good job of appointing judges, going through a commission, handing us a choice of three people. It had worked, and we can be very proud of our system. But you look around at other states, Kathy, not taking any cheap shots, but Arkansas, a governor has to issue pardons all the time. The governor is sort of the last court of appeal for somebody because it's all money and politics. It's true that way in Illinois. And how often do we hear of an Illinois governor in trouble? Quite a bit in my lifetime, for sure. And it's because their system is so partisan and so political and so tied to money.
Well, in fact, that last election, if memory serves me correctly, I think I spoke to you that night, and you were pretty happy with the way, you know, some of the local issues went. Yeah. Now, at the national level, I remember clearly you saying, because I think I asked you, I remember asking you what happened with, you know, the Trump and the Hillary Clinton, and your comment was that you really thought the American public was sick of the media and kind of what some of the word they were getting out. It's almost like it was a backlash at feeling like the media was telling them what to do, maybe. I don't know.
Well, in reflection, I still think there was a lot of truth to that. Again, it comes back, Kathy, to money. The news folks have to sell ads. To sell those ads, they have to show that people are listening. And a lot of that listening is from people who have a particular direction that they're supportive of. And they get, you know, they buy into all the exaggerated news, the fake news now that's been documented. And so, yes, the press plays a huge role. And I think, quite frankly, I don't expect them to say this, but I think if they had a do-over, they would handle the coverage of that election much differently.
Let's go ahead and take a break. 9:33, fascinating discussion today. And again, I want to invite our listeners, if you want to join in, 537-1350, toll free, 866-776-1350. Former Governor John Carlin with us today. Of course, also an instructor at Kansas State University. And you're listening to In Focus on News Radio, KMAN.